On today's episode of Relative Currency,
when you give a woman a dollar, when you teach a woman a skill, she doesn't keep it to herself. So if I really wanted to impact communities much more broadly than my span of reach, I can't just do it, man. I have to do it with women, because I know that she's going to teach her children and she's going to tell her girlfriend, she's going to spread it to the community. And that's really when we're going to make an impact.
Brother, sister, and cousin, we've been relatives for a while. We're chatting about financial things. We're doing it family style. Cryptocurrency, stocks, and loans. Financial literacy. It'll be that and so much more on Relative Currency.
Currency, fine-tuning financial literacy for the middle class.
And now for the conclusion of our interview with Dr. Brittany Halford.
Because every year our tax liability is significant, despite making our quarterly payments above what is taken out of our paycheck. So I am always strategizing about how do we reduce our tax liability. One of the ways that we were going to reduce our tax liability is using some investments that give us an immediate reduction in our taxes today. There were two options when I was talking to the advisor. One was investing in oil and gas, which would give us basically, say we invest $100,000, I'm just going to make the numbers easy, $100,000 into this oil and gas investment as a limited partner, then we would get a reduction of 80 to 90% on our gross income. Okay, so we'd reduce our income by that 80 to 90%, which means that the tax benefit, depending on your effective tax rate, would be for us about 30 to 35%. So the immediate return on investment of that $100K is about $30,000 of tax reduction. And there are some other investments on the back end. That was one option. There was another option in which it was like a conservation easement, in which it would give us a 4.5 to 5 times multiple of whatever our investment is and that in a tax deduction. But because in 2023, the government had really done away with giving the tax benefit on conservation easements because there was a lot of abuse. So the advisor's like, we can do this. Yes, it's going to reduce your tax burden by a significant amount, but we are likely to be audited. You know, we've accounted for the auditing costs, the lawyers, and all of that, but the IRS is likely going to ask you questions about this investment, and that's going to occur likely 7 years down the road. Ain't nobody got time to talk to the IRS to put yourself in a position of auditing 7 to 10 years down the road for this return on reduction in taxes today. Because when I think about that, okay, where will I be 7 to 10 years from now? Where will my family be? We don't even know. And I know that I have 2 small children, so I don't know the stage that my life is going to be in. And I also know that whenever there's stress externally, dealing with the IRS or whatever other type of stress, then that stress comes into the home. I don't want that for my marriage or my family. So I said, no, thank you. The risk was too great to have the reap of this reward today. So that's kind of how I think about investing. It's like, what is my risk tolerance for this? What is my family's risk tolerance for this? How is this going to impact my relationships? How is this going to impact my sleep, mental health, physical and emotional health? And even if the money looks good, but all of those other things are on the negative spectrum, then that means that's a no. That's not an investment worth investing in, because those other things are so much more important than the money.
Man, preach, man. Come on. That could have been a podcast by itself, that response. That was amazing. That was good. Just hearing that personally, man, I wish I had, kind of heard that 5 years ago. Definitely some things that I did that I, was just looking at the bottom line versus everything else that goes around. So definitely thank you for that. The other follow-on question I had is gonna be a little bit of a different topic or different, direction. You mentioned you coach women who are in medicine. What led you to that niche of, I mean, that's very specific, coaching women that are in, medicine. What led you down that road? And is there any plan in the future to expand that, or you feel like that's just the lane that you're supposed to be in?
Yeah, that's the lane. That's the lane that I'm supposed to be in. So part of the way that I invest in myself is I also hire coaches, and this entrepreneurial landscape is all new to me. I mean, I'm becoming more comfortable, but I needed some expert advice. And what they say is that the riches are in the niches, so you can't speak to everyone. And I think that that's true because the messaging, whenever you're talking about money, can be very specific. Yes, you get paid, I get paid, somebody takes some taxes, your taxes may be more or less than mine. We have to pay bills. Like, that's all the same, regardless of where you are, whatever income level you're at. But when you speak to women in healthcare specifically, first, let me just talk about women. Women have less confidence in managing money because women have been left out of the financial arena for centuries, decades. We just recently, I think it was in the 1960s, were able to access credit cards. Okay. And just now, we're starting to think about women as leaders, women as breadwinners within their homes. So women have not had the practice that men have had in creating these financial narratives, plans, and execution. So women feel less confident. Women make less than men. We're less likely to negotiate. We're more likely to be broke in retirement. We're less likely to invest. So that's why women, because I'm also a woman. I was raised by a single mother, and I'm so grateful for all of the resources that she provided me and the resourcefulness that she taught me. I know also that when you give a woman a dollar, when you teach a woman a skill, she doesn't keep it to herself. So if I really wanted to impact communities much more broadly than my span of reach, I can't just do it, man. I have to do it with women because I know that she's going to teach her children and she's going to tell her girlfriend, she's going to spread it to the community. And that's really when we're going to make an impact, a meaningful change in this narrative. Why women in medicine? Because I am a woman in medicine. And although we are very well educated, we still don't have that confidence because we've dedicated our lives to taking care of others. And we unfortunately almost need permission to start to take care of ourselves. Women in healthcare have similar narratives. We don't have confidence. And we start with more debt than men. And Black women alone carry the largest burden of student loan debt. We know that medical school and graduate school ain't cheap. It's very expensive. So when you start out, you're so focused, you've been so deprived for so long because you've delayed gratification to get through your training that once you arrive, you're like, I have to spend money, I have to save money, or and I need to investment. And I don't know what to do with it. So I'm going to go and I'm going to fire. So I'm going to go and I'm going to hire this financial advisor who's going to take 1 to 2% of my assets under management because I don't have the confidence to do it and I don't know the implications of my ignorance. So I wanted to be an example for women to say, look, I'm from Flint, Michigan. I was born and raised in a single parent household, in which, when my mother doesn't like when I say this, but I did like reverse calculations. My mother worked for NBD for years. And she also saves everything. So she had her paycheck and she sent it to me. When I did the reverse calculations, we made under the poverty level for our family size. I didn't feel the burden of that financial deficit, but we were effectively poor until, she got a better job and she married. And so now we had two incomes coming into the household. But for a period of time, we were effectively poor. I want women to look at me, women in medicine to look at me to say, if she did it, then I can do it too. Because I will tell every woman in medicine, every woman out here, that I am no better, no smarter than you are. So I wanted to encourage women that this is possible and you don't want money to be your dictator. That does not feel good. It's okay for you to spend money on yourself and buy a first-class flight if you want to, or have the designer bag if you want to, as long as you have your priorities in order, you're focusing on joy, then you can do that. You can leave a legacy of wealth behind. And to understand that that legacy is not just the amount of dollar signs that you amass in an account, that that legacy is also the stewardship, the knowledge that you're going to pass down to your children so that they can use the money that they have to actually make meaningful change in the lives of others and to be philanthropic in that way. I wanted women to have the permission. Or I want women to have the permission, which I don't have to give them permission, but to feel like they can do it too. Because unfortunately, there aren't many examples like us who are spreading the word because money has been taboo for so long. And I wanted to open it up in a conversational way that we can talk about it in a transparent, laid back, girlfriends type of conversation. Ask your questions and feel empowered to make wise money decisions.
Yeah, that's all. That was amazing. You're inspiring me, and I'm not a woman. I'm not in medicine, but that was amazing.
I wanted to tap into an aspect of your origin story, Dr. Brittany, because my daughter is going to be matriculating into college this year. We had to register with student aid site. And what happened initially on the parent side is that it actually brought my profile up. And confession, it took me 16 years to get my loans paid off. And that was the first time in quite some time that I actually looked at what I had paid off. And I am drawn to the fact that part of, honestly, one of your selling points is that you have the amazing accomplishment of having paid off $138,000 worth of loans in 3 years. And I would love to hear kind of where you were in your personal life, in your educational path during that 3 year period, and how you managed to accomplish that.
Thank you. I didn't realize how rare that was until I started to share. And to be exact, I'm not correcting you, but I'm correcting you, Alicia. 2 years and 9 months. So I'm taking back that additional 3 months you just added on there.
Amen. I love it.
Oh my. So where was I? I had just graduated from residency. During residency, I thought that I was going to do PSLF, Public Service Loan Forgiveness, in which it required that you made 120 qualifying payments before your loans would be considered for forgiveness. But at that time, I don't think anyone had gotten forgiveness just yet. So part of my questioning was, is this really going to happen? Will there be some change in rules or regulations that Now I'm going to be stuck with this massive amount of debt because I've only been making the minimum payment in order to maximize the forgiveness. That just didn't feel comfortable to me because I have family members who still live in Flint and who still struggle with their finances. And for me to be the first physician in the family, I knew that that came with a huge responsibility. And how would I be able to help my family if I also had this massive amount of debt? So that burden of not being able to do and be what I had hoped to be, not only for me, but also for my family, that weighed on me a bit. So I'm like, all right, well, that ain't gonna work. So let's figure out another path. And I spoke with a few colleagues who had refinanced their loans. So I started to do some research about what the refinance process would look like, what would be the benefits, risks, et cetera. And in October of 2016, I decided that I was going to refinance my loans. I had looked at a few companies to see what their rates are, negotiate between them, and made the final decision. So at that time of refinance, it was $135,000 that I had refinanced. When I graduated from medical school, it was $131,000. So throughout my 3 years in residency, I had accumulated $4K in interest while making, minimum payments plus some under PSLF. So $135,000 in October of 2016. And I just said, okay, I'm going to do it under a 5-year term. And I refinanced for 3.5%. So my student loans went from a 6.8% with the federal government to 3.5% over 5 years. So that was still a massive payment, or, not so massive when I think about how much it is compared to other things that I'm paying for right now. But, that was a pretty big payment. It was $2,500 a month that I had to pay. And, I started to pay just the $2,500. Let me see how this feels for me because I'm a new attending. I had just moved in with my husband. We had never lived together, never lived in the same city before. So let me figure out how that's going to work. And then once I started to make an attending salary, make the payments, and see that there was still more money left, like, oh, I could get this thing down more quickly than the 5 years. So I started to make extra payments, but I didn't want to sacrifice because I had made so many sacrifices before. So we were still traveling the world. We were still going out, hanging out with friends, eating, in a strategic way of how we spent our money. So, we opened up a Chase credit card right before we went to India. We put all of the India expenses on it so we could get like that huge bonus of points that we were able to use to fly to Hawaii the next year. So we were very strategic in how we planned this out. But I was just really aggressive in focusing on what mattered most to me. So there would be times in which I would take peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to work. I actually don't mind peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I still eat them today, and I make a lot more money than I did then, right? But eating out every day or most days doesn't bring me joy. So I focused on what really mattered to me, and I applied the difference to my loans because I knew I wanted to get those down faster, but I didn't want to sacrifice. So we still had our firstborn, Brooke. She was born in September of 2018, and I was still making my payments. We moved to Boston and made multiple transitions during this time period. But again, it was just a focus on what are my responsibilities, what's going to bring me joy, and whatever the difference was, I applied it to my loan.
I love that story. I wanted to ask a question I feel like is unique to those of us who are often people of color, that when we have success, we feel some commitment and or obligation to trying to bring along not necessarily just our immediate nuclear family, but also our extended family. And I wondered if you have any guiding principles around that. I mean, obviously, we don't want to extend support to relatives that we've never heard of who come out of the woodwork and say, oh, Dr. Halford, I see that you've made good. Can you help me out with this venture? But what kind of guiding principles do you have in terms of allowing your success to not only be your children's success, but also potentially to be the success, say, of your nieces and nephews, your cousins, your siblings? Do you operate under any kind of guiding principle on that? Do you have advice on how you would negotiate that?
Oh, that's a challenging one. And I think it really just depends on who you are. This might sound a little stereotypical, and I apologize, but I do think that it can be true. You know, for me as a woman, at least, I'm very caring and nurturing. And for me as a family, and the role that I've always played in my family has been the problem solver, the negotiator. And there have been so many times in which things just are not going right at home. I was sheltered a lot. And I'm so appreciative to my mom for sheltering me, because I don't think I would have made it all the way through and had the success that I had academically if I had the stress of all that was occurring at home. So now that I'm here, I do feel a responsibility to give back to the people who helped me, and to give forward to those who may not have persons of in the medical field, you know, or persons of this financial education in their family. But I always tell women, mentees, that you can't help your family unless you can help yourself. So I had a mentee recently brought up similar to me, and her family would reach out for money, and she was sacrificing a lot, even part of her education, to help and to serve them. And I think it can be very difficult to see your loved one in need or in want, and you want to fulfill that need. But I also know that we can help our family members so much more when we have ourselves together. So if I would have stopped after undergrad and gotten some job, maybe, I don't know, maybe I have more money, because I wouldn't have $138,000 in student loans that I had to pay. So maybe I would have more money, but maybe not. And it's only because I've made it this far that I've been focused, and I was a little bit selfish, I think, that now I'm in a real position of service. I have nieces and nephews. My nephew, I'll share. I love my nephew. So he's what, 20 right now, 21. He lives with my mom. And he worked over the summer and throughout school. So I was like, okay, well, let me teach you about the Roth IRA. We talked about it. It's like, okay, I'm going to give you your first investment. I gave him $1,000 to put in his Roth IRA. This was when he was 19. So I don't know why this is the case for him, but he had to submit like a social security number, I guess, because he was like technically still somewhat of a minor and had to do a few other things that he had not done. That money was just sitting there in, you know, the money market account waiting to be invested. So I go home this Christmas and I said, his name is Damani, but we call him Duck. Duck, did you submit the documents so that you could get your money invested? And he said, nah, Britt, you know, I couldn't, whatever excuse. So then I said to him, I said, I have a Christmas present for you, but you're not going to get it until you figure out how to get that money invested. And I don't care how you invest it. Let me just 50% of it, just put it in the S&P 500. And then the other 50%, you could do what you choose. You could, you know, pick individual stocks, crypto, whatever you want. I mean, it's in a retirement account, so he really can't. I guess it's Roth IRA, right? So it's contributory Roth. So he could take it out technically, but he doesn't know that, I don't think. So finally, he was like, oh, well, I can't get my Christmas present until I do this thing. So he sends me a text message like, I'm Britt, I was able to get it invested. And then I was like, well, show me your receipts. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, no, I want proof. Give me a screenshot. And then he sent over the screenshot. So, you know, whenever I'm helping family, depending on the type of help, I want to bring them along on a journey of education with me, so that they can help somebody else. Because if I'm always doing it for them, I'm not always going to be present. So they're never going to be able to do it for themselves. So that's why he had to go through that process. Yes, I funded the account because I gave him the money, but he still had to interact with the people at Fidelity to figure out what the problem was, resolve the problem, make the investment, and then show proof of his work. That's something that he is going to be able to do time and time again, because now it's building confidence because he's already done it. So I like to support families along that journey. I don't always make everybody do this. You know, the younger kids, I typically do. My aunt, if she asks me for something, I just give it to her because she's given so much to me, you know, but it just really depends on the ask. And there's a different approach depending on the person. But the one guiding principle is I can't overextend myself to a point where I can't help you in the future, because if I do that, then we're not in a good position, because if I can't help myself or help you and you can't help yourself, then we're both going to be in need. So I always make sure that I have it. And if I give it and they ask for it, I'm giving it out of a position that I know that there's a possibility that I may not get this back. And the reason why I'm giving it is not because that I expect a return. The reason why I'm giving it is because I love you, and not even that you're in need, but I love you. And so this is an expression of love.
Yeah, very, very well said. Again, with Dr. Brittany Halford, also the owner and of More Joy, More Wealth. She's a wonderful financial coach, coaching women in medicine. So just what a story. If you haven't, you know, go back and listen to this again. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, I always say Stitcher when Stitcher doesn't exist anymore. iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, and all other major podcast platforms. Visit relativecurrency.com, get a free wealth building guide, which I'm sure you will enjoy. You know, Dr. Brittany, you've been so gracious with your time and your answers. We're going to get you out of here, but before we let you go, how can, you know, if there's a woman in medicine listening to this podcast, how can she get in contact with you to find out about your coaching? What steps would she need to take to get, you know, I guess, face-to-face or on the phone or whatever, however you run your operation, how can she interact with you?
Thank you, Frank. My website, morejoymorewealth.com, and on there should be a link to contact me or schedule a Calendly clarity call, and we'll get chatting about what your needs are to make sure that I'm a good fit to be your coach. And if not, then I'll point you in a different direction. So I look forward to anyone who may feel that you just want to elevate your financial literacy, you want to feel more confident and more in control of your money, then feel free. I look forward to chatting with you.
Awesome. That was amazing. Again, thank you for, again, joining us. And just what a lot of great information was shared. Alicia, do you have anything else? We're going to let Dr. Brittany get back to all the things she has to do. If you don't have anything else.
Yes, to a fellow Dr. Mom and Superwoman, I want to again thank you for being here, and remind anyone who's listening that she will be a featured speaker and presenter at the White Coat Investor Conference, February 5th through 8th in Florida.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for that. So for, all of our listeners, or to all of our listeners, I'm Frank for Treffen and Alicia. Thank you again, Dr. Brittany. We'll see you guys very soon on an episode of Relative Currency.
Thank you for listening to Relative Currency. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and other major podcast platforms.